జ్ఞానుల ప్రమాధాన కరుణ ప్రచో ప్రమాధాన కరుణ ప్రచో జ్ఞానుల ప్రమాధాన కరుణ ప్రచోమాధన కరుణ ప్రచోన ప్రభు కోతాగేలాచార్య ఠాకూ ప్రభు కతగేలాచార్య ఠాకూ
అనలే పుషిద
Dorangado nero nidi kota dulu pada. Dorangado nero nidi kota dulu pada. Keshav Sangeera Sange Jekolo Vila Keshav Sangeera Sange Jekolo Vila He sangha na paya kande narukamada.
He sangha na paya kande
narukamada. He sangha na paya kande narukamada. Jaya Vaishnava ke jaya Vaishnava ke jaya Vaishnava ke jaya Vaishnava ke Thakur Bhakti Vinay 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 Thakur Bhakti Vinay.
He who bought the treasure of divine love and who is filled with compassion and mercy, where has such a personality as Srinivas Acharya gone? Where are my Swarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where are my Raghunath Bhatta and Gopala Bhatta? And where is Krishnadas Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all these devotees in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottam Das simply weeps. Oh, for the day when we feel such separation, huh? Srinivas and Narottam and Shyamananda, their preaching and songs are full of so much separation. So today is also the disappearance day of Gadadhar Pandit of the Panchatattva. So it's also an extremely important day on that account as well. I wanted to read a little something, say a little something about Gadadhar Pandit. The topic of Gadadhar Pandit is quite esoteric, and I don't really know that much about it. This morning after Mangalarti, we recited the song by Bhaktivinod Thakur, Vaja Goduru Makana Nakunja Vidum. And at the last stanza of that prayer, he tells us all to worship Gaur Gadadhar. We're used to worshiping Nittai Gaur. Sometimes it's said that worshiping Nittai Gaur is about preaching, especially. So Srila Prabhupada naturally installed Nityagaur deities. This is something actually that was not always done. Even Prabhupada, you know, in the early days when he was moving, after when he had left home, he had a Chaitanya deity. He didn't have Gaur Nitai. But in his temples, he started installing Gaur Nitai deities. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others, they worship Gaur Gadadhar. And it said that Gaur Gadadhar is, when you get into the upper rasa considerations of things, entering into Radha Krishna Leela, you worship Gaur Gadadhar. So this is what it says. This is from the Gauragannodesh Deepika, written by Kavi Karnapur. By the way, Kavi Karnapur is a disciple of Srinath Thakur, Srinath Chakravarti. And he's the disciple of Advaita Acharya. So that's the line of... Of course, Kavi Karnapur is also the son of Shivananda Sena. So he's quite an illustrious Vaishnava in our line. So this is from his Gauragannodesh Deepika, where he describes who the associates of Lord Chaitanya are in Krishna Leela. So he says, text 147 of that book, 147 through 151, Srimati Radharani, who is the personification of pure love for Krishna, and who is the queen of Vrindavan, appeared as Sri Gadadhar Pandit, who is very dear to Lord Chaitanya. Srila Srut Damodar Goswami has also confirmed that the goddess of fortune, who appeared in Vrindavan and was very, very dear to Lord Krishna, has now appeared as Sri Gadadhar Pandit, who is filled with love for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lalita Gopi always follows Srimati Radharani, and therefore she is known as Anuradha, Radha's follower. When Srimati Radharani appeared as Gadadhar Pandit, Lalita followed her, entering the body of Gadadhar Pandit. Therefore, Gadadhar Pandit is the incarnation of both Srimati Radharani and Lalita Gopi. This is described in the following statement of Chaitanya Chandradaya Nataka. Gadadhar, the best of the Brahmanas, is the incarnation of both Srimati Radharani and Lalita Gopi. These two are the transcendental potencies of the Lord. And since the Lord is in one sense not different from his potencies, it may be said that he is present wherever his potencies go. For this reason, it may be said that Lord Hari is also present in the body of Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar is therefore the incarnation of three persons, Srimati Radharani, Lalita Gopi, and Lord Hari. So Gadadhar Pandit, his family was originally from what is now Bangladesh, and they moved to Navadweep when he was, well, I've seen different. One problem, you read these biographies, they don't always agree with each other. But one of them said that he was 12 years old when he moved to Navadweep, and he lived very near to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Mayapur. And they were about the same age. Gadadhar was a little bit younger, maybe a year younger or less than a year younger. So they went to the same school. They were best friends from childhood. Of course, Lord Chaitanya, during his scholastic era, when he was playing the puffed up pundit, he used to tease people. So he would also tease Gadadhar, enter into debates with him. But Gadadhar was always very shy, you might say, introverted, very calm. He would never get disturbed. So the reason for this is part of the esoteric reason. It is said that Gadadhar Pandit, he came to help. He's Radha, so he came to help Lord Chaitanya experience Radha Bhava. So you might say he was the most important associate of Lord Chaitanya, just for that reason, because that's really why Lord Chaitanya came, to experience Radharani in different ways. So Gadadhar Pandit, he is Radha, but he came without the characteristic Radha Bhava of being a left-wing gopi. You know what that means. It means a little feisty. She sometimes has the mood of mana, where she sulks and gets angry and won't talk to Krishna and that kind of thing. So difficult. In the Dwarka Leela, that's Satyabhama. But in the Dwarka Leela, the not feisty one is Rukmini. We know the story of how she became so frightened when Krishna said he was going to leave her, that she didn't deserve him, or he didn't deserve being with her because of so many disqualifications that he had. And she fainted. She took it seriously. Because she was always very submissive. So Gadadhar had this mood in Chaitanya Leela. He was always very submissive and extremely attached. And he had the mission in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. These Braja devotees, they all took part in different ways. They came to assist the Lord in his Chaitanya Leela. So Gadadhar came as Radha to help him, as I said. So he always felt that he had to be close to Lord Chaitanya. So he lived next to him. And when Lord Chaitanya returned from Gaya after he had gotten initiation, that's when he started revealing his ecstasies. He really started going wild and searching after Krishna and so on. And we hear about he would sometimes wreck his house and different things. So one day he called devotees to his home after he had returned because he wanted to tell them something. Basically what he was doing was his close associates, he was revealing to them. He was kind of coming out, you could say, his devotion, because they had always prayed that he would become a Vaishnava, many of them. So he wanted to gather them in his house. So he gathered some of his devotees in the courtyard. And he started glorifying Krishna. But Gadadhar wasn't called for some reason. Lord Chaitanya had an interesting relationship with Gadadhar. I mean, you can understand it's a kind of an interesting situation. Because there's Radha and he wants to experience Radha. Anyway, so Gadadhar, but he heard Lord Chaitanya revealing himself. And then Lord Chaitanya discovered that he was there. Gadadhar started, he himself was going into ecstasy. And either at that time or shortly after that, Lord Chaitanya was searching for Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? He was crying out like that in madness. And Gadadhar said, he is within your heart. So Lord Chaitanya was, with his fingernails, he was starting to tear apart. He was going to tear his chest open because he heard that Krishna was in his heart. But Gadadhar Pandit soothed him somehow. He said, don't worry, just be patient. You will see Krishna. Krishna will appear to you. So Mother Sachi saw this, and she said, this boy is very intelligent. And then she asked him, please, you always stay with my son. Never leave his side at any time. So they were always together. They were very close. But when Lord Chaitanya, you know, he would sometimes show this mood of detachment. So he really didn't invite him along when he took sannyas. But Gadadhar couldn't stand not being with him. So shortly after Lord Chaitanya went to Puri, then Gadadhar also went to Puri to live there, stay there. And he went to a place that is called Yameshwar Tota. Tota means a garden. So it was Yameshwar Garden. Later, a deity was found. I think Lord Chaitanya told him to dig somewhere. Lord Chaitanya's involved in this pastime. The deity of Gopinath was discovered there and then installed. So that became, you know, Tota Gopinath. That deity was called Tota Gop, became known as Tota Gopinath. And Gadadhar, he took the vow then to, because he thought Lord Chaitanya was going to stay in Puri, because his mother, Sachimata, had asked him to stay in Puri so that she could get regular news from him. That's because the devotees would travel from Bengal to Puri to see Lord Chaitanya. So Gadadhar Pandit thought that now Lord Chaitanya is going to stay in Puri. So he took a vow I'm going to stay in Puri. I'm not going anywhere. But of course, Lord Chaitanya didn't stay in Puri. He wanted to go traveling. Especially he wanted to go to Vrindavan early on. I think it was the third year that he finally, the devotees gave him permission to go. So he was leaving, and Gadadhar, he couldn't stand the separation. So basically he said, "The hell with my Kshetra Sannyas, I'm coming with you." So he followed him actually all the way to Cuttack, which is just north of Bhubaneswar. And finally, as Lord Chaitanya was, I think, crossing a river there, Gadadhar was saying, he was trying, Lord Chaitanya was trying to convince him, "No, you can't do this. You can't give up your vow." And Gadadhar didn't care. He said, "I don't care. I'm just going with you. I can't stand not being with you." But then Lord Chaitanya finally convinced him. He said, "This will reflect badly on me if you do this, if you break your vow. So please don't do this." So Gadadhar collapsed, and other devotees basically helped him go back to Puri. So he stayed in Puri. So it's said that in one sense he was meant to train Lord Chaitanya and how to experience Radha Bhava. So one of the tools that he used for this was Srimad Bhagavatam. He was training Lord Chaitanya about Radha Bhava by reading to him Srimad Bhagavatam. Usually we say that Bhagavatam is Krishna, but wherever there's Krishna, there's Radha. In fact, Radha is there throughout. She's just hiding. You have to know, you have to be able to see. So he was, and Lord Chaitanya encouraged him to do this. He would read, I read that he would read to the deity of Gopinath in Bhagavatam. That was his main service. And devotees would also go there and hear from him. So he disappeared from this world about 11 months after Lord Chaitanya. We hear many of the followers of Lord Chaitanya, they started departing from this world gradually. They tried to hang on, but they were so devastated by the loss of Lord Chaitanya that they fairly quickly they left this world just out of separation. They just died from separation from Lord Chaitanya. So that was also Gadadhar Pandit's fate. He followed. It's also said that the more that Lord Chaitanya was associated, you know, in the very final years of Lord Chaitanya, he didn't come out much. He was mostly in seclusion. He was experiencing his very intense ecstasies. And pretty much he was only associating with Srup Damodar and Ramananda Rai. So they're also, Lalita and Vishakha, so they're also training him, you could say, encouraging him. They always knew which verses to quote and which songs to sing to bring out the ecstasy of Srimati Radharani. So as that was deepening and deepening and deepening, then Gadadhar became more and more in the background. He's not so prominent in the final days because Lord Chaitanya was getting his training from others. So, Sri Gadadhar Pandita Ki Jai. So the Bhaktivinod Thakur, what to say, so many things. I tried to compile somewhat of a chronology, some of the points of his life. It would be great if I could remember these things, but I have to write it down. Bhaktivinod Thakur, he appeared in 1838. Now I'm trying to get this straight in my mind because next year I probably won't remember. 1838, maybe you can remember because I'm going to be giving different dates. So 1838, I was thinking, what happened in America then? I don't know anything was happening in America. The Civil War was like 25 years later or something. So that was around that time. So this was Bhaktivinod Thakur, 1838. Of course, the British were in control then. The East India Company was especially very prominent then. They were supposedly a commercial company, a trading company, but they had control of things. They were basically running the place, even though they were, at least initially, they were just there as a corporation. Kind of like things are happening today, actually, when you think about it. Corporations taking over the world. So that was the situation there in Bengal. So he was born in 1838. He went to high school in 1852 through 56. And then he went to what was called the Hindu school in 1856, which was a college, which later became the University of Calcutta. So if you look at the ages, this basically corresponds to the same that we have. Basically, usually in America, we graduate from high school at 18, then you go to college, usually around that. So his life follows that same. He was 18 years old when he went to college. Then, of course, he got out of college. He was looking for work. He went to Orissa in 1858, so when he was 20 years old. And in 1859, he became a school teacher. That was his first job. He taught sixth grade in Orissa. And I probably should mention that he got married as a child, which was, his father died when he was young. He was born in a place called Ulagram, which is in the Navadweep district of West Bengal. Ulagram, it was a small town, but apparently quite opulent. Both Bhaktivinoda's parents and his wife's parents came from wealthy families, but their fortunes changed. And especially after Bhaktivinoda Thakur's father died when Bhaktivinoda was 11, then his mother didn't really have any money. They were struggling for money. Another thing you find in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life was he had a lot of trouble with health. He was challenged, and he did so much. That's another amazing thing, was how he transcended the illness that he had. He was always, not always, but repeatedly, he had illnesses. So his father died when he was 11 years old, and he basically became the man of the house at 11 years old. And so his mother got him married at 12 years old, and his wife was 5 years old. So Bhaktivinoda writes that it was like a doll's wedding. His mother spent 1,000 rupees on the wedding, which that was a lot of money. People thought that she had money because of her background, aristocratic background, but the money was all spent in different ways, so she didn't have the money. So after the wedding, they didn't go on a honeymoon, but they moved into his father-in-law's house. But a nanny went with them. So that was, you know, that was his first home. He lived there for a while. I forget the history exactly what happened after that. But then later, of course, he went on his own. And so his wife had her first child in 1860. So that makes him, what, 32? Or 38 or 22? She had her first child. Now, this was his first wife. She died a year later, or maybe less than a year, because the child was 10 months old. Just imagine. He's just a young man. His wife dies, and he has a 10-month-old son. So he remarried 2 months later. And the woman that he married is the woman that we know, the Mataji Bhagavati. She's the one who was the mother of all the other, the 9 children. He had 10 children. I think that number is correct. Sometimes even these numbers aren't the same. Then he was always a writer. He started writing at a young age. In 1863, so 2 years after his wife died, he published 2 poems. And one of those poems is called Vijana Gram. So Vijana means without any people. It may be Vijana Gram, you might say, is ghost, is another way of saying ghost town. Because the town that he grew up in was hit by a plague, basically, and everybody, you know, either died or left the place. So it became like a ghost town. So he wrote this poem called Vijana Gram, which is the first blank verse poem in Bengali. So it has that distinction. Blank verse is non-rhyming iambic pentameter. So iambic pentameter is a short, long, short, long, short, long, short, long, short, long. 5 occurrences of short long. So ta-ta, 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 ta-ta. So that's called iambic pentameter, and blank verse means not rhyming. So this was popular, it was becoming apparently more popular among the English, in the English poetry at that time. Now Bhaktivinoda, he went to, at least in high school, at some point he went to English, he started at a Hindu, a Bengali speaking, maybe in elementary school, but then he went to an English medium school. So he learned English early in his life. He was very good at English. He was noted for this. So he also read many things. And he read so many Western writers and philosophers. So he was aware of what was going on in English poetry. So perhaps in imitation of what was going on and what was hot, what was in vogue in English poetry, he wrote this Bengali poem following this blank verse style. And he wrote another poem at that time called Sannyasi. Now, I made a note here about this. I'm not sure why I did, but let's see. I put the page number down. It says, the Sannyasi in two chapters, let's see. Oh, he wrote this himself. I don't know. Oh, this is from a review. So it was actually published. These poems were reviewed in the prestigious Calcutta Review of 1863, volume 39. So it says, this person who was reviewing it says, many important literary men praised Kedarnath's efforts, and the poems were reviewed in prestigious Calcutta Review. So it just says it has two chapters, reflects much credit on the author. Of the minor poems, the descriptions of spring and the translation from Carlyle are very fair specimens. We hope the author will continue to give his countrymen the benefits of his elegant and unassuming pen, which is quite free from the objectionable licenses of thought and expression which abound in many dramas recently published. So he was getting praise early on for his writing ability. So in 1868, so now he's 30 years old, he becomes deputy magistrate of Dinajpur. So he's rising up in the ranks. Deputy magistrate is a important position. Dinajpur is now in Bengal. It's a fairly large city. Bangladesh, excuse me. It's in Bangladesh. Now, it was around this time that he, now we know that in his youth, I should probably say something about, his family was mostly worshippers of Durga, which is very, of course, common in Bengal. But he was also familiar with the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, and there were always Hindu festivals going on. So it wasn't like he didn't know about Krishna, know about Ram. In fact, he says at one point in his life, some pundit or astrologer told him that if you chant the name Ram, you'll never have any problem with ghosts. So there was a period where he got into this habit. And even though somebody was trying to debunk the idea, saying this is all just superstition, he said, but I kind of liked it. So he said, I just continued with this practice of chanting Ram, 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 Ram. So he started to, around this time, get more of an interest in Vaishnavism and in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Here, I'll read a little something that he wrote. He says, in Dinajpur, the Vaishnav religion was fairly strong due to Rai Kamala Lochan Sahib. There were many renunciates and Goswamis coming and going. A few wealthy persons were supporting many assemblies of Brahmin pundits. Respectable gentlemen would regularly come to discuss the Vaishnav Dharma with me. I had a desire to know what the genuine Vaishnav Dharma was. He talks earlier about how he was always curious in his youth. He wanted to really know what, you know, just like we, you know, many of us were seekers. So he was a seeker, you can say. From a young age, he would question people about things, about Dharma. He says, I wrote to our agent, Pratap Chandra Rai, and he sent a published translation of Srimad Bhagavatam and Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this is when he got to Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Bhagavatam and started studying them, reading them. One thing you find with Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very serious student. When he put his mind to wanting to learn something, he really got into it. We'll hear later when he was in Puri, well, this is coming up, that he had people, you know, he regularly met with scholars, pundits, because he wanted to study these books thoroughly. So he said, I also bought the book called Bhaktamala. On my first reading of Chaitanya Charitamrita, I developed some faith in Sri Chaitanya. On the second reading, I understood that there was no pundit equal to Sri Chaitanya. Then I had a doubt. Being such a learned scholar and having manifested the reality of love of Godhead to such an extent, how is it that he recommends the worship of the improper character of Krishna? So this is how Krishna was seen at that time. He still is by some people, actually. Afterwards, I prayed to the Lord with great humility. O Lord, please let me understand the mystery of this matter. The mercy of God is without limit. Seeing my eagerness and humbleness, within a few days he bestowed his mercy upon me and supplied the intelligence by which I could understand. I then understood that the truth of Krishna is very deep and confidential and the highest principle of the science of Godhead. From this time on, I knew God as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I made an effort to always speak with renounced Vaishnava pundits, and I came to understand many aspects of the Vaishnava Dharma. In my very childhood, the seed of faith in the Vaishnava religion was planted in my heart, and now it had sprouted. From the beginning, I experienced anuraga. It was very wonderful. You'll see that now Bhaktivinoda moves very quickly. He becomes very advanced very quickly. So in 1871, he got the position, the post in Puri as the magistrate there. And he was in Puri for only 5 years, at least during this assignment. There was a time he went later, but I think it was after he was retired, just to perform bhajan there. But he served as the magistrate for 5 years. And that the schedule that we hear, like we heard it this morning, the schedule of his life, how he did everything, you know, with the stopwatch and it was really amazing. That was given by his son, Lalita Prasad, and that was when he was living in Puri. So he didn't necessarily follow exactly that same schedule all the time. So it was during that time that he wrote, he visited the Samadhi of Haridas Thakur, and he wrote that poem that includes the line, he reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die, and so on. So that was written at that time, during his stay in Puri. And he also wrote a famous English song, Alas for Those Who Spend Their Days in Festive Mirth and Joy. So that was written during that time. Saragrahi Vaishnava, it's called. And in Puri, he became very serious about his studies. So let me read a little something about that. Let's see. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur made great strides in his studies at Puri. By the way, this is from the Seventh Goswami by Rupa Vilas Prabhu. Very nice book. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur made great strides in his studies at Puri. He describes them in his autobiography. His autobiography is actually a letter that he wrote to Lalita Prasad describing his life. I've heard that he'd never meant for it to be published, although I think maybe it has been published. At least in Bengali. So he writes, I appointed Gopinath Pandit as my tutor, and with his assistance I first studied the 12 cantos of the Bhagavatam with Sridhar Swami's commentaries. That's the end of the quote. So Rupa Vilas writes, two other pandits named Harihar Das and Markandeya Mahapatra, who had studied Nyaya and Vedanta at Navadvipa and Benares, studied with him. Being a little weak in grammar, which he had originally studied with Iswara Chandra Vidyasagara and Dwijendranath Tagore in Calcutta, he resumed his studies and gradually learned to compose in Sanskrit. So again, a quote. After finishing the Bhagavat, I made a copy of the Shat Sandarbha of Srila Jiva Goswami and read it. Then I copied and read the Vedanta commentary, Govinda Bhashya, written by Baladeva Vidyabhushana. Next, I read the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Then I made a copy of the Hari Bhakti Kopalatika. So that book, it says, it's the later work was an unsigned manuscript found by the Thakur, which he was much impressed by. It was later published by him and thereafter by his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That book is available in English. Bhaktivinoda wrote it, or translated into Bengali, and later Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, I believe, translated into English. Hari Bhakti Kopalatika. It's by an unknown author. It's interesting because I think it's in the introduction. I had that book at home and I read it recently, where Bhaktisiddhanta says, it seems that this comes from the Vishuddha Dvaita, said Vishuddha Dvaita follow, which is Vallabhacharya Sampradaya. So even though it wasn't coming from Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Bhaktivinoda was very impressed with the book. It's glorification of Krishna, and so he published it. So let's see, going on here. So Bhima Prasad, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, of course, was born in Puri. He was born there in 1874. There was a conspiracy against Bhaktivinoda while he was in Puri. I won't read about it, but there was actually some idea that they wanted to kill him, actually. They said, I think maybe the king was involved in this, and maybe some brahmanas. They didn't like, because Bhaktivinoda, just like Bhaktisiddhanta, was very pure, and he didn't like bogus things, like especially Sahajayism, and unauthorized things, so he didn't necessarily associate with the pundits, so sometimes he was disliked for that. In 1876, he returned to Bengal, and in 1876, he wrote one of his major works, the Sri Krishna Samhita. This is an amazing book. If you read it, your head will spin. You won't be able to figure out what's going on. It's another book I read recently. Because he's preaching to the Bajraloka, especially the Bajraloka, those were Bengalis who were becoming westernized. And they were trying to sort of bring Hinduism into the modern age and make it acceptable to the British intelligentsia and the Bengali intelligentsia. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was well known by them, he knew them, but he really wasn't part of their group. He had different ideas, he didn't like. But at the same time, he was trying to preach to them, and he wanted to preach to the British as well. So he wrote this book where he more or less accepts the Western history, the Western way of looking at things. But then in the introduction to the book and the final part of the book, he more or less dismisses all of that. It's kind of, your head kind of spins when you read it. It's hard to understand where he's talking, where he's only trying to preach, and where he's, you know, giving the real philosophy. I found it quite confusing to read. But anyway, he sent this book to Ralph Waldo Emerson. You know, in America, well, one thing that was going on in America during this time where there was the rise of what are called the American Transcendentalists. They were reading the Upanishad. They had discovered the Upanishads, and they were really excited, actually, about the Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita. You know, we had these quotes from Emerson and Thoreau. So this was, you know, this was going on during this time. So Bhaktivinoda sent a copy of his Krishna Samhita, but it was written in Bengali. So Emerson wrote back to him and said, well, thank you, this is nice, but unfortunately, I don't know Bengali. So. So let's see. So another one of the major things. Now, of course, Bhaktivinoda, he actually retired fairly young. I think he was only something like 52 years old. And his family wasn't happy about it, and his employers weren't happy about it either, and the British government that was employing him. But here, this is what it says. It says, in October of 1894, at the age of 56, okay, the Thakur decided to retire from government service against the protestations of government authorities and his family. He felt that the greater work of preaching the glories of the Holy Name was urgent and that his government service was a hindrance. He retired to Surabhi Kunj in Godrum Dweep. So he had this place in Navadweep, in Godrum, his bhajan place. where he engaged himself fully in preaching, chanting, and writing. So he was always, even when he was doing his government service, he was taking every opportunity to preach. He also visited Vrindavan a couple of times. He went one time with Lalita Prasad and another time, I think, with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. And he went with his wife one time. Took a couple months off from his work. Took a... and sojourned. He stopped his sabbatical. He went to Vrindavan to experience Vrindavan Dham, visit Vrindavan Dham. Let's see. It's getting, time is going on here. Let me look for a couple of things here. Now, of course, he was initiated in 1880. Before that, he had actually published the Kalyana Kalpatru. Well, actually the same year. We know, of course, he wrote so many poems, so he was publishing these wonderful poems, just amazing. And he was also publishing a monthly journal, monthly magazine, Sajjana Toshini, which means for the pleasure of the devotees, Sajjana Toshini. And this book says he published 17 volumes over the years. Now, I don't know what 17 volumes means exactly. Because sometimes volumes have numbers, so you have, you know, every year is a volume sometimes, and then you have different numbers. So I don't know if that means he published for 17 years, different, and what the total was, I'm not sure. But anyway, he received diksha from Vipin Bihari Goswami. A little something about him. He was a family descendant of Vanshi Vadananda, who took care of Sachi Mata and Vishnupriya after Lord Chaitanya left. So, quite a personality. He took care of them, Sachi Mata and Vishnupriya. So, Bipin Bihari Goswami came from the family line of this person. And he was in the disciplic line of Janavi Devi. Janavi Devi had thousands of disciples. So there are many lines in Bengal today. Still, there are so many lines of Gaudiya Vaishnavas coming from associates of Lord Chaitanya. So Janava Mata has many. There are many who are connected to her in disciplic succession. So let's see. In 1886, he published the Bhagavad Gita with the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and his own commentary. And it has an introduction by a famous novelist called Bankim Chandra. So it probably doesn't mean much for us, but it probably meant a lot at that time to have an introduction by this distinguished novelist. He received the title Bhaktivinod in 1887. He was 49 years old then. It was given to him by some pundit or one of these literary societies. He was much respected, very respected by the British. He was very much wanted, and by the intelligent class of people. He was very well known, very respected. And then he was assigned to Krishnanagar, because sometimes he was living in Calcutta and sometimes in Krishnanagar. So Krishnanagar, of course, is in the general Navadweep area, so he get to visit Lord Chaitanya's places of pastimes. And it was at this time, while he was stationed at Krishnanagar, that he discovered the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And at that time also, he was quite challenged by his health. He was having a lot of health problems. So this is getting towards the end here. This is something, this is from this book also, Samatha Goswami. This is quite interesting, actually. This is that book, Sri Bhagavatarka Marichamala. This is a different book. It's Bhagavatarka Marichamala. He collected verses from the Bhagavatam. It's a compilation of verses from the Bhagavatam in 20 chapters that explains the philosophy of Krishna consciousness according to Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. That book is also available. So he published this in 1901. So these are his concluding remarks to tell how he came to write this book. Now, Bhaktivinoda, he would reveal really personal things about himself. He even said who he was in Krishna Lila, his Manjari name, he revealed that. So that's quite remarkable because Vaishnavas generally don't do that, but he was very open about his progress in Krishna consciousness. So he wrote this at the concluding remarks to this book, this compilation of Bhagavatam verses. How I was inspired to compile this work is a mystery which I felt improper to disclose, as it might constitute spiritual conceit. Subsequently, I realized that it would be a slight against my spiritual master, which might stand as an obstacle on the path of my spiritual progress, and therefore, without shame, I recorded the fact that, in other words, neglecting to reveal would be an offense to his guru. So he said, I recorded the fact that, while under the benediction of my guru, I was meditating deeply upon the Srimad Bhagavatam one day, when in a vision, Sri Sarup Damodar, the intimate adherent of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, instructed me to compile the verses of the Bhagavatam in accordance with the principles of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, as set forth by Sri Chaitanya, so that the book could be read with an easy understanding and with happiness by the devotees of the Lord. Sri Sarup Damodar further guided me by giving me a wonderful explanation of the final verse of the Bhagavat, and he also showed me how I was to explain the verses in the light of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. So he was having a conversation with Sarup Damodar, Goswami, who told him how to write the book. So I'll just read a little excerpt here from the end, The Last Days. Show how he left this world. This book has a lot in it, actually. This is on page 30, which talks about his leaving, but then the book has, 230. Not including the index, there's like 300. No, most like another 100 pages more with appendixes, quotes from Prabhupada about Bhaktivinoda in his letters and elsewhere. So let me just read a little something here. This is his last days. It's today we're commemorating his disappearance. After taking to the renounced order of life, the Thakur accepted some disciples, and one of them, Krishnadas Babaji, continued to serve him as he had in Jagannath Puri. So at some point, he was a householder until late in life, but then he finally took Babaji initiation. And then he made some disciples, and this Krishnadas Babaji was his closest disciple and served him personally. There's a picture of him in this book, actually. Feeling a strong desire to be fully absorbed in the spiritual plane, the Thakur shut himself up in Bhakti Bhavan in the year 1910. So Bhakti Bhavan is in Calcutta. Sometime he was doing his bhajan in Calcutta at this Bhakti Bhavan, his home there, and sometimes in Navadvip, in Godurum. Thakur shut himself up in Bhakti Bhavan in the year 1910 so that he could remain uninterruptedly engaged in the divine service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Feigning paralysis before the eyes of common people, he entered into the state of total samadhi. On June 23, 1914, the sun began its southern course. It was the same day the Gadadhar Pandit, the incarnation of Srimati Radharani, had left the world some 450 years before. Precisely at noon, the Thakur entered the eternal pastimes of the Lord, far beyond the vision of the conditioned souls of the world. The Thakur Samadhi ceremony was delayed until the sun began its northern course. At that time, his last remains, his ashes, were taken from the Bhakti Bhavan and brought to his home in Godrumadvip. There they were placed in a silver urn and buried in the midst of a huge kirtan and festival held in his honor by his disciples and friends. Hundreds took part, and his direct presence was experienced by everyone. Truly the Thakur's great stanza composed in glorification of Srila Haridas Thakur applies to him. He reasons ill who tells that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still and sound. The Vaishnavas die to live, and living try to spread the holy name around. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai. So, anyone like to add something? It's late already, but... All right, we'll close here then. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai.